What happens when a company is indistinguishable from its CEO and the CEO does this on an earnings call?
And so where specifically will you be in terms of your capital requirements?
Next. Boring bonehead questions are not cool. Next.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. Tech founders and CEOs often become household names. Travis Kalanick, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Steve Jobs, and Elon Musk, who cut off an analyst, as you heard, for asking boring supply chain questions in a recent earnings call. And this week, Musk attacked the media overall after news reports about problems with Tesla production and factory injuries, also about crashes related to its autopilot technology and a less than positive review of the Tesla Model 3 in Consumer Reports. Some analysts said investors should be worried about Musk's behavior and its impact on Tesla. Paul Kudrowski is a venture capitalist with SK Ventures. I asked him how the role of the founder has changed since the first dot-com boom.
Yeah, we've kind of gone full circle on this whole issue of founders. So for a while, as you say, there was kind of this cult of celebrity around CEO founders, and that was almost 20 years ago. That sort of hit its apogee. And then that kind of fell off as it became more about let's get sort of adults to run the thing because everyone lost too much money in the late 90s. And now that's all really turned around again, where once again, founders are sort of the celebrity CEOs of the tech set. That has all sorts of consequences. It has some good consequences, like it's okay to be, you know, a non-professional CEO who wants to stay in charge of their company and yet raise money, you know, because that's always their fear, these young CEOs, that if I raise money, maybe my venture capitalist will tell me I can't be in charge anymore. And that has, you know, makes them nervous. So there's a good part of it. Then the other side is that there's a reason why we often like to have not just sort of professional CEOs, but also why you want to put in a bunch of things around the CEO to give you a little bit more oversight and control over what goes on there. And there's lots of data to suggest that, as reluctant as some founders might be to embrace it, that it actually leads to better overall performance.
So is there sort of a bell curve? Is there a point at which it's great to have the founder really in charge, imbuing the company with the spirit? Tell us about the data.
Yeah, from a few years ago, Noam Wasserman looked at this exact issue. He actually found there was kind of a bell curve, and that around 3 years out from founding was actually when having a founder have sort of overall and sort of more or less complete control was a point at which you actually found companies began to suffer somewhat in terms of the valuation they saw on the market. And that could have been on a public market. It could have been the value they saw when they were raising money, but whatever. The point was, in a broad cross section, that seemed to be the point at which if you didn't begin to relinquish some control as the founder, that it had consequences for you. And that makes a ton of sense, right? Because if you think about it, at that point, if you're successful, you probably got 50 to 100 employees. Well, that's not really your, you know, métier. That's not what you got into this gig for. You got into it because you love technology and you had some things you wanted to do. And similarly, if at 2-3 years you're failing, well, that's also another reason why you probably still don't have the founder in charge.
Right. Well, and then what happens, though, if we start to over-rotate or over-focus on the outliers? Like you might say, in response to that study, look at Jeff Bezos, yeah. Look at Travis Kalanick, look at Elon Musk. Is it just because we want to kind of make our business leaders into celebrities and say, this must be the best way because of, you know, these four people I can think of?
Right. Well, this is the problem. It's kind of as the behavioral finance guys say, it's the availability heuristic. As I often say to people, when their only example in response to an argument is, hey, but Steve Jobs, well, hey, but you don't really have an argument. The reality is that in a much broader cross-section of companies, away from a few, you know, noteworthy examples, and no one can come up with more than a couple of others, it just doesn't work that way. And that there are exceptions to that rule just proves that creating companies isn't physics, it's creating companies.
Well, then let's talk about the potential negative business consequences then of this kind of founder control. I actually had someone tweet me the other day and say he's not going to buy a Tesla because although he really respects the brand and the cars, he feels like Elon Musk has become too erratic and he is so closely associated with the brand that he worries about the future of the vehicles. Does that seem reasonable?
I won't speak to his car purchasing decisions, but I will say that this is a natural consequence of having a founder so closely associated with a company and a company that's Troubled is probably maybe too strong of a word, but that's at a pretty clearly at a crossroads in terms of its future, and is responding to that crossroads, this struggle to produce 5,000 Model 3s on the schedule that he previously laid out, which has consequences for their cash flow, which has consequences for their debt and their share price and so on, that he's reacting in a pretty, let's say, voluble, maybe tweet-heavy, possibly erratic way. And that, I think, feeds directly back into the company and the reputational consequences of the company. And that's one of the consequences of having not just a founder CEO, but a celebrity CEO. And there's a lot of work in this area as well, at the consequences of these so-called celebrity CEOs and the cover effect of having them on magazines. And this is what we're seeing here, that it really does cut both ways and can cut quite severely on the negative side whenever that all that attention turns negative.
So are there ways for companies to prevent this level of founder control early? I mean, I know there's a bunch of different board structure conversations, but
right.
What can be done to kind of keep the great man in check, if you will?
The great man or woman, yes. So what needs to happen is exactly what you sort of implied. One is just simply having proper board oversight and making sure the board is independent of the CEO and controls things like governance, like audit, all these very mundane things like how people are paid, how they're compensated, who's in charge of what, so that you don't want to just have a rubber stamping board. And this is really key, a discussion you want to have with a founder very early in the life of a company, is making sure that it's not enough to just have a board. It's not like having, a pet rock. It's not just something cute or clever. It's something that you want to have because it plays a function at the company, and specifically it provides some independence and objective oversight. And not to pick on Tesla or Elon, but if you have a look at the board at Tesla, it's a good example of a board that's not particularly independent. It includes at least one board member who's his brother, one board member who's from an acquisition that they did. These aren't two board members that are venture capitalists. These aren't necessarily examples of what you would expect from a large publicly traded company. And similarly, doesn't have board members with auto manufacturing expertise, the sort of people who might hold his feet to the fire and say, listen, when we did this 20 years ago in launching car XYZ, here are the issues we had. None of those people are there. So these are worrisome signs in that specific case. And more broadly, these are all the things that you want to have more broadly when you have a proper independent board.
And I actually think it is fair to wonder about the media's role in not just this company and this one CEO, but in general, the celebrity CEO and the founder culture. These are great stories, right? Like, the media loves an Elizabeth Holmes. And right. So is it reasonable to say that, the media didn't ask enough tough questions about Tesla 10 years ago or 5 years ago or 3 years ago, and now are all sort of jumping on the CEO meltdown story, when previously they were on the CEO genius story?
Yeah, I feel very strongly that's the case. And if you look at count the number of covers of magazines that Elon Musk has been on over the last 8 years. I mean, there was something like, I saw someone recently point, there were like 12 or 13 of them. And none of them were what you would call sort of deeply investigative looks at the issues in trying to transition from a sort of an artisan performance car company to a high volume, very sort of wide selling car company, and the consequences of that in terms of, organizational structure. These are incredibly hard things. And people I know who follow the auto industry much more closely than I do were just sort of in shock that this sort of was treated as something that'll just work itself out. And yet, the company was, the company, and specifically Elon, was permitted to give these fairly, I don't know, almost mundane answers to these very difficult questions. And the media had an opportunity to do a lot more here, to dig much more deeply. And for all kinds of reasons, not least of which it was just a wonderful story, it never did it. And those chickens are coming home to roost right now. And everyone looks a little foolish for not having asked the questions. And just to take it one step further, because of what happened at Theranos with Elizabeth Holmes, now you can see this incredibly almost whiplash effect, as people are like, well, now I'll ask every hard question I ever had in mind, and I'll ask them all at once, right? Which makes many in the media look almost vindictive, which I think fed part of what happened this week with respect to Elon's, incredible sort of tweet outburst about this. And that's because people are now panicking and feeling like I need to ask every skeptical question I should have ever asked, which is ridiculous, because this should have all been asked over time. Mm-hmm.
So looking forward, what is your, there's a big board meeting on June 5th. What is your advice for Elon, whether he steps down as chairman is what's up for a vote? Should he do that, or is that also an overreaction?
Oh, I think it's an overreaction. I think this the bet is made here. This is his company, and he's going to take it to heights or crash with it. But it's not that specifically his role there is not going to, nothing is going to change in that regard. And if there was any suggestion it would, I just wouldn't believe it. I think what you saw in the most recent announcements with respect to the flattening of the corporate structure at Tesla in the wake of, I don't know what, 20 executive departures over the last sort of 12 months, that's him further building control of the company. There is no chance that that turns into the reverse where he's suddenly giving up some of the reins of control. That's not going to happen.
That's Paul Kodrosky of SK Ventures. I'm Molly Wood. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.